Hello and welcome to this podcast, which covers the discussions at the October meeting of the International Accounting Standards Board, which was held in London from the 20th to the 22nd of October 2015. My name is Kristina Reitan and I'm part of the communications team at the IFRS Foundation. I'm joined by Gary Kaburek, ISB member, and Hugh Shields, Executive Technical Director, to talk through the discussions and the decisions taken at the October meeting. And before I hand over to Gary and Hugh, I just want to mention that the views shared in this podcast are those of the participant, that they do not necessarily represent those of the International Accounting Standards Board. So Gary, one of the topics discussed at the October meeting was leases. Do you want to talk us through the details?
Sure, Kristina. We met on the 20th of October and the board finalized its deliberations on all the technical aspects of the leasing standard. There's several minor sweep issues that would be typical at this point where you just got to fill in little gaps in the writing thing. I think the one of most consequence was a decision we made on the accounting for lease modifications that extends the use of a lease. And we're going to account for that as a continuation of the existing lease. In that sense, the conclusions came around to the modifications of a lease will be accounted for very similar to related options to do the same activity that were already built into the lease. And I think that covers and gets a consistent set of decisions between modifications, options, or renewals. And other than that, there are several minor other sweep issues, and all 14 board members agreed with the sweep issue decisions that we had made. We authorized the staff to go ahead and proceed to prepare the ballot draft, which we actually expect to get this week, and we're looking forward to wrapping up the project by the end of the year. There's no more technical deliberations planned or needed. We did decide that the effective date would be the 1st of January 2019, and you can early adopt the new lease standard, but only if you adopt either at the same time or earlier IFRS 15 on revenue. And the importance to that is within IFRS 16, which is the number of the leasing standard, it refers to IFRS 15 for any number of items of guidance. And so obviously you can't adopt the leasing standard earlier than you're adopting the revenue standard. So the revenue must be done either at the same time or earlier. And we look forward to going through the ballot draft and getting it out to publication together with our colleagues at the FASB on their version of the document.
Okay, this is Hugh Shields here. I'll pick up on a couple of topics which are related to financial instruments. So, first of all, the board considered a paper summarising the activities of the Transition Resource Group for impairment of financial instruments. It considered in particular an issue raised at the September ITG meeting relating to the measurement of expected credit losses in respect to the undrawn portion of revolving credit facilities. I think the main message to take from this is that the board noted the issue, and the issue is actually that banks do on occasion allow customers to draw down in excess of their contractually agreed credit limits, and therefore might that in practice create some kind of disconnect between the accounting and the credit risk management view. Well, the board took note of this issue and concluded that the requirements of IFRS 9 are clear, and that consequently the board does not intend to take any further action on this issue. And I think that's a strong message in general in relation to this transition resource group by comparison to the revenue transition resource group, that there is no intention to open IFRS 9 for any potential amendments at this stage. Then in relation to our project, which is really looking at the distinction between debt and equity, to give it its formal title, Financial Instruments with the Characteristics of Equity, the board discussed a research paper on this topic, and in particular an analysis of the challenges associated with accounting for derivatives on own equity, and also how IAS 32, which deals with the presentation of financial instruments, how IAS 32 deals with those challenges. And the board acknowledged that any approach to classifying derivatives on own equity will require a compromise between reflecting the underlying exchange of equity and non-equity instruments and the operational challenges of doing so. And in the end of that session, no decisions were made, so essentially the board will continue its discussion of this project at a future meeting. And on that, I'll pass back to Gary to talk about the disclosure initiative.
Yeah, thanks, Hugh. At our October board meetings, we had several subsets of the disclosure initiative were discussed and voted upon by the board. And just to recap, the disclosure initiative is a suite of about 10 separate projects designed to overall improve the quality of disclosures, both in content, timing, level of detail, and so on. The centerpiece of this project is the Principles of Disclosure discussion memorandum that's going to be coming out, and that at the October meeting, the board reviewed the due process steps and was satisfied that all the appropriate staff work and outreach and so forth was achieved, and gave staff permission to start the balloting process, which we would be looking for to publish a document hopefully in the first quarter of next year. It'll be a long document for those of you that are following the Principles of Disclosure part of this project. It's got many pieces covering the role of the primary financial statements versus the notes, guidance and discussion of aggregation and disaggregation, the writing style, the structure, incorporation by reference possibilities, the role of non-GAAP, and so on. This is going to be a very long document. It's also a very important document for us. Also, at the October meeting, we made some decisions on IAS 7, and actually two separate decisions. One, the staff had outreached and had a lot of input about should we make require disclosures. Originally was described as restricted cash, eventually became described as cash disincentives, broadly and simply described as reasons when cash is in one subsidiary not to move it to other parts of the group where it might be more needed. We decided that there is too many issues to be decided. This really is not a narrow scope amendment or a small project. We've decided to defer further work on it now to look at the scope as part of a broader examination of liquidity disclosures at a future meeting, as well as see what feedback comes from the agenda consultation project with respect to the prioritization of this project. Then lastly, on the disclosure initiative, the other amendments we're looking to do to IAS 7 is dealing with a reconciliation of changes in financing obligations in the financial statements. In this case, we're defining financial obligations as those obligations that would be considered finance activities in the statement of cash flows, as opposed to trying to define debt on the face of the balance sheet. The board was satisfied all the due process steps had been taken and gave the staff permission to prepare the ballot draft for decision and distribution. We did decide that the effective date would be for periods beginning on or after the 1st of January 2017. And at least when you're initially applying the standard, you would not have to go back and do comparable periods. So the full year 2017 for calendar year companies would be the first year you'd have to do it. That'd be a one-year-only disclosure. When you got to the succeeding year, you'd have 2 years of disclosures. Back to you, Hugh.
Okay, so I'm going to pick up some of the discussions that the board had in relation to our insurance contracts project. And first of all, I'll talk about the discussion which involved the different effective dates of IFRS 9 on financial instruments and the new insurance contract standard. And the board is really here continuing its discussions on the forthcoming exposure draft of amendments to IFRS 4, which is the current insurance contract standard. And that exposure draft is intended to address the possible accounting consequences of the different effective dates of IFRS 9, financial instruments, and the new insurance contract standard. And the board tentatively decided that the forthcoming exposure draft to amend IFRS 4 should have a comment period of 60 days. So that is actually an acceleration compared to our normal practice and reflects the expeditious nature, if you like, by which the board is approaching this particular topic. So I think that's the key point to take away from that discussion is the accelerated programme. Then in relation to the insurance contracts project more broadly, there were a number of different elements that were discussed by the board. So first of all, there was a discussion in respect of the of transition reliefs. And in particular, the board continued its discussions on the transition reliefs on first application of the new insurance contract standard for the classification and measurement of financial assets accounted for in accordance with IFRS 9. It also considered accounting for contracts participation features and presentation and disclosure. So all of the discussions on this, and there is some detail, and I would certainly recommend if you're interested in that detail to look at our ISB update. There was near unanimity on all the discussions on this. I think we had a unanimous decision in relation to transition reliefs, and in relation to the disclosure requirements, I think we had one disagreement, but basically the board was strongly in agreement on the decisions that were made in relation to disclosure requirements. There was then some discussion of the restatement of comparative information on initial application of the new insurance contract standard, and the board tentatively decided to confirm the proposal in the 2013 exposure draft that on first application of the new insurance standard, all entities are required to restate comparative information about insurance contracts. The board also tentatively decided that on first application of the new insurance standard, an entity that has previously applied IFRS 9 and chooses to apply any of the transition reliefs for classification and measurement of financial assets is permitted but not required to restate comparative information about those financial assets, only if it is possible to do so without hindsight. And there was a unanimous agreement on that decision. There was then some discussion about whether the new insurance contract standard should retain the mirroring approach, which has previously been considered by the board. The board tentatively decided that the mirroring approach proposed in the 2013 exposure draft should not be permitted or required. There was unanimous agreement on that decision. And then the final piece to mention is that the board considered presentation and disclosures for insurance contracts. In relation to presentation, the board tentatively decided to confirm the 2013 exposure draft proposals related to presentation of line items of insurance contracts and financial statements. And then in relation to disclosures, the board also decided to confirm the disclosures proposed in the 2013 exposure draft, but with some changes. Now, again, there's a little bit of detail in relation to these changes, and I would refer you to the ISB update for the detail of that. But just to say that the board was unanimous in its agreement with those decisions, and that therefore that was not a controversial discussion. And with that, I shall pass back to Gary again.
Okay. Thanks, Hugh. At the October meeting, the board also discussed a number of issues relating to goodwill and impairment and definition of a business. To step back for a minute, last year we had completed our post-implementation review of IFRS 3, which is business combinations. There are several high-priority recommendations for further work. On behalf of the board, there was a number of other medium and lower priority issues as well. But take the first two high-priority issues, which is the subsequent accounting for goodwill after an acquisition and the impairment tests for goodwill. And perhaps jump to the punchline, we actually made no decisions in this meeting on either the subsequent accounting for goodwill or on approving the impairment test. We did ask the staff to go back and do some additional work to better understand what information investors want to receive about goodwill and impairment and bring it back to the ISB for a future decision. The net of it is goodwill. We currently only tested for impairment today. Much of the discussion dealt with when and if so, how would you amortize goodwill, and would you amortize goodwill and also have an impairment test? I mean, they're all highly related issues in there. And message in the PR was really quite clear. These need some attention on us. The third issue we discussed in the meeting was the definition of a business, and which was another one of the high priority items out of the PIR. The We made a number of decisions, six to be exact, about how to clarify and improve the definition of a business and the related application guidance. We decided on what exactly constitutes a business, and we amended the existing definition that a business is an acquired set of activities and assets that has to include a minimum input and a substantive process together, which can contribute to the ability to create an output. And that is, in fact, a change. We also decided that if the business acquired is concentrated in one asset or a small group of very similar assets, it probably does not constitute a business. And several other clarifications. I think those are probably the two most important ones on a going forward basis. And of course, if you define an acquired set of activities as a business, excess purchase price goes into goodwill, and if it's not a business, the basis of the assets are adjusted. We've decided, is based on the input from the post-implementation review, similar work that we reviewed the FASB did, and research work our staff had did. We're going to proceed directly to an exposure draft on this. The board was also satisfied that all the necessary due process steps were taken to enable the staff to prepare an exposure draft, which I expect will issue in the very next coming months. Christina, back to you.
Thank you, Hugh, and thank you, Gary. As Hugh has already mentioned, there are more details on our website in the IASB update, and you can find that on www.ifrs.org. Thanks for listening.